Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
Thanks for joining us on Money FM 89.3. In the spotlight today, it's all about Russia, Ukraine. As the war rages on, an energy battle is spreading across Europe. Countries are racing to replace Russian fossil fuels, while Moscow cuts off gas supplies to some nations and threatens others with the same.
They're calling it gas blackmail. So the European Union now vowing to continue to phase out the purchase of Russian gas in response to Russia's decision to stop the flow of gas to Poland and Bulgaria this week. So what are Europe's energy alternatives now that Russian gas is off the cards?
Well, to discuss this further, we are now joined by Pushan Dutt, Professor of Economics at INSEAD. Good morning, sir.
Good evening.
I have to apologize, and I should explain. I've been doing the morning show for most of my radio career, and I've just joined the evening show, so please forgive me.
It's okay, Bharti. It's morning in Europe now, so we're talking about Europe.
All right. Let's stay international, yeah? Now, first of all, sir, Russia opened this new front in its war on Ukraine, and a lot of people are talking about this, directed at two frontline states in Eastern Europe that have backed Kiev. Wasn't this anticipated?
So I think while the action may have been anticipated, the timing and targets were not that predictable. So one of the things that we are all grappling with, I think, is the sheer speed and scale at which events seem to be unfolding. So Lenin once said that there are decades when nothing happens, and then there are weeks where decades happen. So just to give you a concrete example, Europeans in recent times thought that they were immune to major disasters, and all they had to worry about was trade agreements, gas taxes, etc. Now, just in the last 2 years, they've been hit with a global pandemic and a land war triggered by Russia. So this has created solidarity amongst the Western nations, reunified NATO. Germany has done an about-face on defense spending. Sweden and Finland are running into the NATO. So we see that, you know, the world order actually changing quite significantly. We should keep this in mind. Mm-hmm. Now, in the short term, the questions are whether Russia will continue to throttle gas supply to other European countries. But I think the larger questions are more important, like, you know, will Ukraine turn into the graveyard of Kremlin's expansionist ambitions? Could it lead to a new Russian empire? Do we see the beginnings of decades of military conflict? So the true consequences of this will not be known for decades, I think.
Professor, do you think this was all timed properly by the Russian President Vladimir Putin at a time when the West, Europeans in America, Canada, were all investing heavily on looking for alternative fuel sources? They were relying heavily, Europe in particular, on Russian gas and oil. So do you think this was timed properly for the invasion of Ukraine, knowing that they could not or may not be able to go on business as usual without Russian oil?
Yeah, so, you know, Senator John McCain said that Russia is a gas station with nuclear weapons. Mm. So if I look at the export composition of Russia, it's essentially crude oil and refined petroleum products and natural gas, right? And as the world is moving towards alternative fuels, you know, driven both by, you know, the rising temperatures and also lots of pressure from bottom up, from people, from employees and things like that, it might seem that, you know, this might be a time at which, you know, Russia has the maximum leverage in order to extract concessions. But I also think that if I step back, that the invasion has actually really united Europe. Mm-hmm. And the story of the Ukrainians bravely fighting against a terrific, terrible enemy has actually, you know, given a lot of hope and support to countries like Poland, Bulgaria, and other Eastern European countries.
The thing is, Professor, I think a lot has been said about Russia's intentions here. It has long used the strategy of divide and conquer. It's repeatedly cut or threatened gas supplies of smaller countries to demonstrate the costs of defiance. As you noted yourself, this time, though, it looks like the tactic may not be working. It has backfired. During this war, its hardball tactics seem to be unifying Western countries. While you did say that how this will unfold remains to be seen, what exactly do you think is going on in the minds of Western countries? How long will they be able to stick with this stance, really?
So I think the way the war has gone and, you know, the kind of images which are coming on our television screens makes me, you know, forecast that they are actually going to be very, very severe on Russia in terms of cutting it off from dollar markets, in terms of, you know, imposing sanctions, including cutting off central bank reserves. And this thing is likely to persist for quite some time. That this is sort of not a one-off situation. Now, you're absolutely right that, you know, Vladimir Putin in the last more than a decade or so has pushed the West multiple times and has noticed that there has not been a significant response. So many red lines have been drawn, but these red lines have been crossed by Putin, and he has seen that there is no consequences. So rationally, he sort of judged that if he were to invade Ukraine, something similar to Georgia or what happened during Crimea was likely to happen. But now it seems that the West has drawn a firm line. And in fact, we do see a shift where the Americans today are actually talking about how should we weaken Russia so that it can never actually take any of these kinds of aggressive actions against its neighbors. This is a significant change even from like a month ago.
But is there really anything that NATO or the United States or Europe can do at this point with the West unwilling to get into, you know, boots on the ground kind of warfare with Russia?
So I think there are two kinds of wars going on. So there, one is a military war, which is being fought by Ukraine and Russia. Mm-hmm. And then there is an economic war, which is being fought with the West, the U.S., Western Europe and Russia again, right?
Yes.
So, and they are using both of these weapons. Now, we should not think of it as sort of like binary, that the NATO is on the field or NATO is not on the field. You know, I think it's more of a continuum where they, if you recall, initially they were very reluctant to even give any weapons that could be construed as offensive.
Right.
Right. But now they seem a lot more open to that. They are talking about, you know, weakening Russia, like explicitly. So this is a fundamental shift, right? The Germans are only sending helmets to the Ukrainians.
Right.
Right. And now they are thinking of sending, you know, much greater weapons in much greater quantity. So I think something fundamentally has actually shifted. And because we sort of focus on the day-to-day, what is happening, we lose track of the fundamental shifts which has been happening in the world and in Europe in particular, just in the last 2 months.
We're speaking to Professor Bhushan Dutt, Professor of Economics at INSEAD, about the situation in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, as well as the response from NATO and America. So, Professor, you're talking about the economic war in this case, but where Russia may lose the West economically, it also has China or even India to count on, right?
Absolutely. So we know that the big loophole in all these sanctions is Russia's ability to not only sell oil and gas to the Europeans, but also to India and China, and using the ruble as a currency. So rupee, ruble, yuan, ruble accounts are actually being set up. So I think the truly big decisions that we should keep our eye on are the following. The first one is, will the Europeans accelerate their transition away from Russian oil and gas? They essentially have till the fall or winter of 2022 in order to do this. And will they be willing to take an economic hit if they want to do it quickly? The second thing that we have to keep an eye on is, will the Americans especially, and also the Europeans, put sanctions in the form of export controls, which forbid not just their own firms from selling stuff to the Russia, but also firms from India and China. If they do this kind of secondary sanctions, then the pain on the Russian economy is going to be very, very severe. And in fact, the Russian central banker acknowledged that right now we should not just look at exchange rate movements and, you know, financial variables. Very soon, there's going to have a big real effect.
The thing is, Professor, on the OPEC front, the UAE a few weeks ago urged Western countries to be reasonable in their expectations. It said that OPEC Plus is here to stay. OPEC has also told the EU that current and future sanctions on Russia could create one of the worst ever oil supply shocks. It would be impossible to replace those volumes. And it has signaled it will not pump more to make up for all of this. So considering that we have been talking about Russia's allies here, Russia must be fully aware of this. And it seems that Russia is also willing to separate its business interests from its territorial ambitions. So what really is the way forward here, considering that many people have not even been able to fathom Putin's end game?
So these are difficult questions to answer. But I think, you know, the counter to the OPEC plus is what is going to happen with shale oil within the U.S. So in shale oil, a lot of the situation has been that, you know, the shale oil producers have not been investing in the last few years. So the shale oil producers, they were the ones who used to make sure that whenever oil prices went up, they would start producing heavily, and then they would bring the oil prices down. If the oil prices came down, they would, you know, idle their production, and they would make sure that the oil prices did not move beyond the range. Shale oil producers have become extremely risk averse, especially the investors. But I think the Biden administration is trying to make sure that the shale oil actually comes in as sort of the marginal producer and make sure that there is a upper bound on prices. So as an economist, I believe that high prices provide lots and lots of incentives. So as prices go up, I think there'll be lots of incentives for these marginal producers to step in. So I don't see a scenario where you will have oil prices of $200 and it's going to persist for a long time. So therefore, in the long term, it's more about, you know, the export controls we should pay attention to, that the Russians can't import a bunch of machinery and machine parts, and therefore they need to really rejigger their business model exactly as their central banker was saying 10 days ago.
Thank you very much for that analysis, Professor Pushan Dutt, Professor of Economics at INSEAD. Thanks for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.